You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. And welcome back to The Purple Mystic Podcast. I am your host, Natalie, and today I am talking with the starry-eyed little lady, Joey Morris. Hi, Joey.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm very glad to have you on. It feels like it's been forever since we've had a chance to sit down and just talk and see how everything's going. So why don't you tell everybody what you've been up to? You used to be on Witches of the Moon, the YouTube channel, and you left that some time ago. So why don't you tell everybody how things have been going since then?
Oh, wow. That's some time ago.
Yeah, that's a lot, right?
Well, you know, life. In the business world, I'm still on YouTube and still doing all of the YouTube stuff, although it takes a little bit more of a backseat these days compared to some of the other things. Still running Starry Eyed Supplies, which is now at starryeyedsupplies.com. Which is my witchcraft store and offers a range of different things from physical, metaphysical products such as candles and spell oils and so forth to books to the blogs on there. And then I've been doing a lot of writing as well because I really love writing. It's one of my favorite things to do. So.
And you do have a couple of books published for those that are listening that may not be aware. So why don't you talk a little bit about the books you've published?
Yeah, sure. So far I've done some self-publishing and then I've been featured in other things. So,
are you still there, Joey? Did I lose you?
No, sorry, I just had to use a second. So far I've done some self-publishing in that I've released my own books and then I've been featured in other places. So the self-publishing for myself, I've done 4 volumes of Songs of Shade so far.
And, oh, you're up to 4? Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And Songs of Shades is a collection of channeled invocational poetry separated into different sections. So you have the priestess section, the witch section, the healer section, the shapeshifter section, and the warrior and the phantom section. And then within that is channeled poetry and invocation that comes from channeling in sacred space. And then accompanying that is ritual work, spells, things of that nature. So those are Songs of Shade.
Very good.
They cover all the different gods, so it just depends on what gets channeled through, although Morrigan is of course always in them. For anyone that doesn't know, I work primarily with the goddess Morrigan, so she is always front and center stage there.
Why don't we talk a little bit about something you just mentioned that I don't think gets talked about a lot in terms of within the magical community or really in regards to the Morrigan, although I'm sure you've talked about it frequently. I don't see it talked about a whole lot in other sources about her, and that is the shape-shifting aspect, because I think that that is something that, especially in this day and age, is really kind of a critical aspect of being able to kind of mold and adapt and shapeshift to the differing changes that are occurring. It is a form of adaption. And I think it's part of the goddess that she really brings forth in those of us that work with her, but that doesn't get talked about a lot.
Sure. I mean, I think if I had to define her as one thing, I'd define her as a shapeshifter more so than I'd define her as anything else. Not that the Morrigan likes to be defined, so the minute you try to,
you're right. I was going to say, loosely speaking.
Yeah. But it's within the myth. So for anybody who's very worried about making sure that they start off in a place of mythology, the shape-shifting is a big part of the remaining existing Morriganic myth that we have left over, where she is said to shape-shift into animal form. The crow is the main example, but you have the wolf and the eel and the heifer, the cow as well. That's in the mythology. So she shapeshifts her shape into animal form, into different humanoid form. There's an element of this sort of playing with perception and bringing messages in forms that you don't expect them to see. And I feel like there's something interesting in that for me, especially in modern times, that it doesn't matter where the message is coming from, it matters what the message is and how you respond to it. And I think there's something in that for modern times, that especially when we're dealing with an overload of information in the world right now and trying to get to the root of what's true and what's not. So
I also think it's interesting that the animals that she's associated with in terms of her shape-shifting, for me at least, align in some way to the elements. Like you have the eel for water, you have the crow for air, or the raven for air, you have the cow for earth, you know, because I think a lot of times people don't associate her very much with the earth, but she is very intimately tied to the land. Mm-hmm. In the form of the red cattle. And I think that's also something that gets kind of passed over and not really discoursed about in terms of grounding yourself using the Morrigan.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's absolutely. Well, she's all to do with sovereignty of land as well. So that it was her right to replace a ruler if they were no longer fit to rule. And the ancient Celts saw that as being like physically unfit. So if they lost a limb in battle or anything, that would count. But they would see it as a sacred marriage. They had sacred marriage ceremonies between the king and the land, so, or the ruler and the land. So if the ruler was suffering, then the land would suffer. And it was her divine right to sort of replace that ruler, the end of one cycle and the beginning of another. So to me, she's always been tied to the land. And I always have this very strong feeling that I don't think I've read it anywhere. It feels this way, that because she's so associated with battle, and then the battlefields where all these people like bleed out and die, that just became like this one great big like blood sacrifice to the land in her name, in my head. Similar to the way that like the Vikings would do that. They would like bleed on the land to make it holy. And I wonder whether or not we've lost some of that from the Celtic tradition, because of a lot of the mythology and the history was written down by Christians, and obviously they wouldn't want that in there.
They wouldn't want to continue those beliefs, because that's what they were trying to stamp out. Mm. I think that the ancient Celts had such an affinity for the land and a connection to the land, and the fact that they saw the land as holy and divine, that, you know, if you want people to stop doing something, what are you going to do? You're going to tell them that it's bad or evil. And so a lot of that kind of either got written, downplayed, or completely written out. And I totally agree, because that's always the impression I've had as well. You know, it's she is all everywhere for me. So that was that. I just find that a really interesting aspect that people don't often bring up. You know, they have a little mention of it in the cattle raids of Cooley and that. You don't really see or hear about it a whole lot. I'd like to talk with you a little bit about how you first became aware of the Morrigan's presence in your life, and how you began to kind of cultivate a relationship with her, because that's something that I get asked about a lot. And I have found in talking with others that how she makes her presence known is different for different people.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is kind of a twofold story, because the Morrigan has been with me my entire life. I just didn't know it was her.
Thank you. Exactly.
So from being a child, I would talk to mother. I called her mother, and it was at odds with the whole idea of it being like a father god or whatever. And like right from being little, I was like, no, there's a mother, there's a female that I like, I can hear, I can, and that I dream of, and that I talk to. But I didn't know it was the Morrigan at all. I didn't know her name. And so for a very long time, I didn't even ask. And I got to a point in my path later on where I was like, okay, I want to know what your name is. I want to know who you are. I want to know, I want it to be more defined now. So it was when I had come to the place where I had asked for that, that then it started to take shape, to become, you know, that things started to fall into place. And I felt like she had clues throughout my life. Like some of them were really vague and random. And then there were like definite things. So there were a load of clues. And I remember things like I had fallen across the phrase the silent watcher at the summer solstice fall, and the washer and the ford. Those two phrases I'd fallen over somewhere. They had made a big impact on me to the point where I had written down in my journal at the time. And I remember when I really started to meditate on it, I had my vision. It was a male. It's not. It wasn't at all. So this ties back into the shapeshifter energy. This what I thought was a masculine horse, with like a feathered like cloak thing around the shoulders, and then like it was a mixture of like a helmet, and it looked like a crow like beak, but that covered most of the face, so you could just see its lips just, and it, this booming voice talking. And I thought it was a messenger for her, and then realized it was her. And this horse was saying, do you regret anything that's happened in your life? Because I've had a difficult life, very difficult life. Would you take it back? Would you trade it for an easier life? In this meditation, and I was sat there in this meditation thinking about it, and I was like, well, I don't know who I would be if you took away all the things that I've been through, so no. I've had some very painful lessons that made me who I am, and I wouldn't take it back because I don't know who I would be in this moment without everything that I've lived through. And that was apparently the right answer, so that then started to unlock it. Thing. And then I realized who she was, and I started adding all those breadcrumbs up together. And I had this very interesting thing happen. I was talking to somebody about this the other day, that despite living in England and despite being a history major right up to university level, we had never been taught the Celtic history ever.
And that's interesting.
It's weird, isn't it? And I feel like the Morrigan did that on purpose, because I was such a history buff. I loved mythology. Like growing up, I was obsessed with like the ancient Egyptian gods and culture and mythology. And I feel like she knew that and kept me away from the Celtic mythology a little bit. So I still had something to discover and learn when I got to the point where I was ready to realize who she was. Because I might have been like too burnt out if I'd already done all that history stuff.
It's very interesting you say that, because I was much the same way growing up, and especially with the Egyptian pantheon. And I still have an interest in ancient Egyptian culture. It fascinates me. I see a lot of similarities. And it was the same with the Greek cultures. I was very interested in Greek mythology as well, and the idea of a pantheon and gods and goddesses. But there was not a lot. I did read some Celtic mythology, but it was like fairy tales. So it was more of the good folk than it was of the gods and goddesses within that pantheon. And it's interesting that you say that maybe she did that on purpose, because I can see that. In terms of, you know, I was faced with a similar question, not in a dream, not from the Morrigan, but, you know, would you change any of the really crappy experiences you've had growing up? And I said something very similar. I was like, well, it made me who I am today. So no, I guess not. You know, I just hope that it's made me a better person and not a bitter person. And it's interesting, because that seems to be the key question that gets asked. before she makes herself known to you.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating to me that so many of us have had something of a similar experience.
Well, when she works with you as well, you that process of growth continues. So maybe it's something in that if you resent what you've already been through and you're trying to like wish it away, then there's no point in engaging with you any further because her path is difficult and you will be facing trials and you will feel tested and you will feel at your wit's end, but you will grow at a ridiculous rate as well at the same time.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. And, you know, going back to that idea of the shape-shifting energy, I think it's some of that shape-shifting that relates to our adaptability and ability to overcome some of these challenges. You know, you have to morph who you are to, or how you appear to be able to get through some of these difficult situations. It forces you to adapt and change, which I think is part of that shape-shifting energy that comes forth with her. Mm-hmm. But I also experienced the shape-shifting energies in meditation itself in terms of my personal soul journey and my shifting of my soul within meditation in order to gain a vision or knowledge of some sort. Is that mm-hmm. anything you've ever experienced?
Oh yeah, all the time. I have this theory, or someone asked me about this recently as well. So it's interesting you brought it up, because some people feel like that when you go into like a visualization and shapeshift, you can only shapeshift into one animal and that's your like main totem or whatever. Some people within the Celtic tradition feel like you probably get three. So you get one of land, one of sky, one of sea, which is the main three realms in the Celtic tradition, that you move through each of those. I feel like you gravitate towards three in those realms that are your strongest, but you're still able to access everything through the spiritual ecosystem and through the Morrigan herself. But you might find that it's easier and you gravitate towards shapeshifting to the main three that you connect to most strongly in your journeys. But sometimes she might push you outside of it so that you're looking through the eyes of a different creature in order to gain information in a way that is a bit alien to you, is a bit outside of your comfort zone. And obviously crow, and well, it's mainly hooded crow that happens to me in air the most. And the way that comes about through visualization is I usually end up staring at a massive crow in front of me, and then in a second something just goes click, and then it's like then it switches and you are looking out through the eyes of the crow, and that carries on through journey work. So it's absolutely something that happens to me.
Well, it's going back to the idea that her journey with you will not be easy. I think that it's important for people to understand that just because it's not easy doesn't mean it's not worthwhile. You know, I was talking with another guest on my podcast for this past week about the same kind of thing with her, is that, you know, in some of the earlier writings, modern writings, where she was starting to make an appearance and make her presence known, you would see things like just stay away, you know, don't engage, you know, words like scary.
Oh, the fear tactic. Yeah.
Yeah. And that fascinated me because it really honestly didn't push me away. It made me that much more curious. And I don't find her scary. To me, she doesn't come off as scary. She's, you know, it's kind of like when people talk about the mother aspect of the Morrigan. Some people say, well, how can she have a mother aspect? Well, she is a triple goddess. She does have a mother aspect. She's not your cuddly, you know, here, come here, let me pat you on the back and comfort you kind of mother. She's the kind of mom that says, well, you're not dead, so get up and, you know, slap a Band-Aid on it and keep going. It's not any less loving, in my opinion or my experience. It's just a different viewpoint of motherhood. It's more you've got to learn how to get through the tough in order to appreciate what's not so tough. And that's kind of how that aspect of her comes through to me. And I'm curious if that's a similar thing for you.
Well, as I evolve my path with her, I come to new understandings about the things that I think are important. So one of the things that we see in the myth, and I think is true, very true, is she has the ability to instill fear in people. So when Banshee screams in the mythos and people can die or people can be struck down by fear. And it feels to me like that she would cause states of fear in you, because what is fear? Fear is a human reaction to change most of the time, right? It's a fear. It's usually a fear of not being in control, fear of the unknown, which is, again, not having all the information, not being in control. And what do we say about fear? Everything you want is on the other side of fear. So fear is useful, but it's also quite often an obstacle and something to be overcome. And that's what the Morrigan's all about, like pushing you to overcome the blockages that you place on yourself and the blockages that you find along the road of life. So I feel like that maybe she would bring about fear in people, but it's not from a place of she's an evil demon to be, you know, that she's fucking with you. Oh, sorry, I'm might not be allowed to swear.
That's good. All right. We'll let that one slide.
So, but she's not doing it from a place of cruelty. She's not doing it from a place of hatred. It's usually from a place of like, it feels a bit like training, like warrior training. Like if you were in warrior training and your trainer smacked you with the training stick, it's to teach you how to block. It's not because they want to see you bruise.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I think you're so much more eloquent about expressing it than I am. It's like, I know it's in my head, but yes, that's exactly what it's like. It's meant to bring about, it's not evil. And, and that's one of the things that drives me nuts when people say, well, she's a dark goddess. That means she's bad. Dark doesn't mean bad. Dark just means not light. Yeah. It just means that you're going to be dealing with shadow aspects of things and working with her that you're going to need to face. But it's exactly that. It's a warrior training. It's not meant to harm you. It's meant to make you stronger and to allow you to overcome. And precisely, you phrased that so beautifully. I'm just like, I want to frame it and hang it up. Totally. So how in working with her and in doing some of the work with the death aspect of her and so forth, that's another aspect that people ask about, because they're like, well, what do you mean you work with her in a death aspect? Well, things have to change. And with change comes the death of something, but in its place comes a rebirth of something or a birth of something new. Mm-hmm. So for me, working with the death aspect simply means that I am looking at what needs to be shorn off or to die and be let go of in order to allow my personal growth to continue. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that people often get confused about when they hear people talking about that. But what about you? I mean, do you feel it similarly, or do you have a different take to that?
I definitely believe in the death cycles in life. And I've been talking about that for forever, it feels like, anyway, because it feels to me, I mean, in my life under the Morrigan in particular, that once a certain cycle is over, it does feel like dying. And she puts me through this process. So, okay, I should probably backtrack a little bit. So I work with Bave more than I work with the other aspects of the Morrigan. And the aspect Bave is the death aspect. It is they call her the crone, but she doesn't necessarily show up as the crone aspect because she shapeshifts. But it's definitely that death aspect more than perhaps the other aspects are. But they all flow into one another. It's not that clear cut. But I work with her the most. And she puts me through this process, which I've come to call the phantom death. So if you guys know what like a phantom pregnancy is, like when your body has decided you're pregnant even though you're not, the phantom death feels like that. So it's like you're going through these situations which are traumatic in life, and your whole body gets on board as if, and it feels like you're dying. And it feels like you're physically struggling and you can't breathe and your heart's going on, your body even like goes cold. It's horrendous. And it's the scariest, like I've felt that in traumatic situations like two or three times in my life, and I do not fancy it again. So touch wood that we're done with the phantom deaths. But that to me feels very real, even though I know it's a phantom death and Dave is the phantom queen. So it's experiencing it. And I definitely feel as though when my life changes, it feels like a complete shift in life. It feels like nothing is the same. I have it very dramatically, like probably more dramatically than most people I know. I end up being in different locations across the country, completely different locations, with surrounded by different people. And it just completely, and I, you know, I have people that I hold on to for like dear life, like please don't leave. But like, right. It really does, you know, shift completely and utterly. And it definitely is that. Now, for me, I consider myself somewhere between a shadow priestess and a death priestess at the minute. And I feel like working with death aspects for some people with Shamarigan is going to be quite literal. There's going to be death midwives. There's going to be people that usher the souls of the dead to the next life. And that is where they feel their calling is under the Morrigan. And that's where they gravitate towards, because she has that aspect to her, particularly through crows. So crows are said to be psychopomps. So they were said in the Celtic tradition to consume the souls of the dead and carry the souls to the other world. So if the crows are an extension of her, so she has that role as a psychopomp. So she, it depends on the interpretation of the myth. Some people feel like she chooses the warriors who are going to die, and just some are like she chooses who, you know, who the worthy warriors are and how they died and what that, you know, she guards their death from the mythology. She knows when it's coming, and she chooses the nature of it. So for some people, it's going to be quite literal. That they work around death, and that is a reflection of the Morrigan for them. So, but the thing with death is it's such a massive topic that it's going to be such a unique experience depending on who you are and what your experiences are and what the Morrigan has kind of laid down in front of you as your path.
Right. And that's an interesting viewpoint to it. I hadn't considered it in that way before. Another thing that kind of brings to mind though is that working with the crone aspect, or although as you said she's a shapeshifter, so it doesn't always come across that way, but what makes it interesting for me is that is also the aspect that contains the wisdom. Mm-hmm. The wisdom of your journey, what, not just overcoming the obstacles, but what did you learn from that? It's, you know, when I work with that aspect of the Morrigan, and I am, as I'm getting older, I'm working more with that aspect than I did, you know, initially, because like you, she was always with me even in my youth. And I just didn't realize at the time what all of these things that I was seeing and experiencing were. I didn't have a name for it. I didn't understand that it was all related at the time. But looking back, you know, they always say hindsight's 2020. But when I work with her in that crone aspect, it gives me an opportunity to kind of reflect on, well, not only did I survive this, but what did I gain from it? What did I lose from it? What did I gain from it? And how is that going to forward my journey going forward? And I think if you're not reflecting on those things, then you're missing something of what she's trying to teach you in terms of your warrior training.
Yeah,
because that's a great way of putting it. So do you work with other gods or goddesses actively? I know you mentioned that you channel other gods and goddesses, but do you actively work with other gods or goddesses, or is the Morrigan the one you work with, that others may speak through you.
The Morrigan gave me permission to be a channel. That's her doing. So like, there are some people who are like, oh, you work with all these different gods and goddesses because you're always talking about them. And it's like, no, that's not what's happening. Like, she gives me permission to knock on their door, take down their details, and forward it to the people that need it. Like, that's how that works.
Okay.
But in terms of fully working with anyone else, not really. I work with Freya a little bit from the Nordic tradition. And I feel like her and Morrigan are a little bit like sisters in arms kind of thing. So Morrigan permits it. So, for example, Freya is the only other goddess that has a little statue in here at the minute. And I'm also working with Ceridwen from the Celtic tradition right now, which again, the Morrigan has permitted. So primarily, though, it's her. And I never feel like I need anyone else because she is a shapeshifter. Sometimes if you need a certain kind of healing, you'll be better off with a different energy. So sometimes for healing, I'll go to Bridget from the Celtic tradition, because the Morrigan is like, we'll just cauterize it. And Bridget comes exactly. in like, no.
Just
no.
slap a Band-Aid on it and move on, you know. But Bridget is like, no. More than that.
No, we need to clean this wound out or it's going to fester. You can't just like stick a burning hot coal on it. You're going to cause more damage. But sometimes Bridget comes in and she's like, no, we're going to do some healing now. And some, you know, some really, really beautiful things have come through that. Although I will say, like, through my Patreon, I dedicate each different month to a different god or goddess, and we explore that together on Patreon. And the Domnu cycle was insane. I was not expecting Domnu to come through in the way that she did. She's an ancient Celtic ocean goddess. She's a little bit less known than some of the others, but oh my goodness, that cycle gave me chills, and it was deeply enriching for me and quite a lot of other people too. They said afterwards, like, wow. And I was like, I know. And because I live near Avalon now, she's quite front and center there too. So in Glastonbury here in the UK. So that was really interesting. I do have Hades keeps trying to poke his head through the door, and Morrigan will not allow it. It's quite funny. I don't know what it is. I don't know if I had a past life involving Hades or something. I don't know, but he keeps like trying to come in, and she's like, no, nope. And she closes the door on him. It's really funny. I don't know why.
That but, is funny. Maybe you just don't need two of those dark aspects at the same time. A little bit of jealousy, maybe, you know, and it's funny because I've always been drawn, like I said, to the Egyptian pantheon. I do have a beautiful cabinet in my office that is, it was imported from Egypt. It has gold leafing in the paint. It's really quite beautiful. And I have a lot of statuary in there, but I don't consider that an altar. It's just more my recognition and respect for the history that's involved there. Mm-hmm. So I also have my altar for the Morrigan, and I work with Cernunnos. I didn't have a real super strong father influence in my life. I mean, my dad's still my dad. You know, he and my mom are still married. I've been very fortunate that I didn't have divorce to deal with as a child, but my dad has always been kind of emotionally absent, if that makes sense. He's kind of so involved in his own thing that he never really paid attention to what was going on in my life. And so that was something I always felt was lacking, that I felt I have received from Cernunnos. So he has an altar next to the Morrigan, and she has allowed that also, but I wouldn't even try to bring anybody, at least not at this point. I don't feel I've been given that kind of leeway, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I have learned that herself can be very particular about offerings. Mm-hmm. In other words, don't give her something that's you know, if you're gonna give her a liquid libation, make sure it's from the homeland, because she doesn't like
I couldn't get Irish whiskey once, so I got Scottish, and she smashed the bottle. The bottom See, fell me, out.
My bowl cracked. Bottle.
Yeah.
My bowl cracked. I was like, we'll just slip her some Jack. She'll take Jack, right? No, she will not. No, she won't. And it ruined the stand that I had her on at the time. I had to completely replace it. I was like, okay, won't do that again. So
unless she asks for something random, sometimes she'll ask for something really weird and you're like, what is happening? What is happening right now? Like, she asked me for Kiffy incense, the Egyptian incense. I was like, really? And I was like, why? And she wouldn't give me an answer. And I was like, all right, we'll sort that out. We'll figure it out. And I know why now. And that I'm not sharing yet because I'm not ready to. But like, I know why we were doing that. And I was like, oh, it makes all the sense now. But there was just that moment where you have to trust in what she's asking you.
Precisely. I have hit upon an Irish whiskey that she seems to approve of. Of course, it's her namesake. There's only one place you can get it here. Fortunately, we happen to have a profuse amount of these liquor stores in the area. But, you know, because sometimes trying to get liquor from out of state can be tricky due to some of the laws. But, yeah, it's Morgan Triple Distilled Whiskey. She seems to like it.
Yeah. She asked me for rum last time. And I was like, rum? And she was like, I want rum. And I was like, okay, that's a bit weird, but all right.
I can see that. I can see that.
Well,
I was asked for market, moss once.
And it was 5,000 cuts was the name of it.
Oh.
So that's why. 5,000 cuts rum. And I was like, okay.
All right. Well, whatever she wants, she gets, right? Yeah, I was saying, she asked me for moss one time. And I was like, moss? Where am I supposed to get moss? We don't have moss around here. Well, I happened to go into a shop and they had Irish moss. And I went, yep, I need some of that. I'll take that. Thank you. My husband's like, why are you buying moss? And I was like, don't ask. Yeah. Don't ask what you really don't want to know the answer to. And he's like, okay.
Yeah, she wanted butter too. I had to go find Irish butter last time that she wanted something strange. And it had to be Irish butter. But then that ties into
Kerrygold.
So
she wants some of that Kerrygold.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, fortunately you can get that around here. So if she ever asks me for that, I'll be prepared for that one. It's expensive, but I'm willing to spring the money for it because it's good.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting, some of the things that get requested. You know, I really enjoy her presence in my life. And I know a lot of people are going to go, wow, really? But to me, it's a comfort. She is the one thing that I can look at back on my life and say, boy, that was really consistent. You know, even when I wasn't aware of it, it was consistently there and slowly, you know, prodding me. I can't say quietly prodding me. Mm-hmm. I didn't connect the dots. But it was an insertion of I am here,
yeah.
I am here. And as I look back, I'm very in awe of how she has worked in my life, and I really it means so much to me to have others such as yourself that understand that journey, because some people just do not. But you've always been special to me, so.
Aww.
That's why I'm so thrilled to have you on here. I'm like, oh, I love my Joey. I want to talk a little bit about some of your products for people that may not be familiar with some of your products or have been kind of looking, but I haven't really gotten anything from you, because I still have. I haven't been able to bring myself to utilize it. Although when I bought it, it was my intent to do so. I got a totem animal kit from you a couple of years ago, and because the owl is an animal that I've always associated with, which is strange because it's not at all what most people would associate with the Morgan, and I don't necessarily associate it with her. I think this comes more from my Native American roots, but you made this wonderful totem, and I have not been able to use the candle. Every time I go to light it, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to save that. I don't know what I'm saving it for, but I'm saving it. But yeah, your products, yeah, the energy that just comes from your products, I mean, it's very clear from the minute you open the package. It's all beautifully crafted. You can tell that you've put a lot of heart and soul into it and a lot of very positive energy into your work. Mm-hmm. It, you know, when you are crafting these items for people, I know you put your heart and soul into it, but are there days where you just have to say, I can't make anything today because you're going through something or experiencing something or just not feeling like you can put into it what you need to, or do you work through that?
No, it's not like, okay, so right, the Virgo in me wants to work through, because the Virgo in me is like, we need to keep working, we need to keep going, we need to get this done, blah blah blah. But I had like a really bad bout of illness because of this. I got a double ear infection, not last Christmas but the Christmas before. And I was in the emergency room on the 26th of December. And, you know, it knocked me out for nearly a month. And I won't allow myself to get to that point anymore for my sake and for, you know, for the product's sake and things. Because I can energetically work through it. And the reason is because I create energy matrices that feed into products. So, for example, the first time I create a smudge, for example, because they're my favorite, to be honest. I'm not playing favorites with products or anything, but they are.
and your smudges are awesome too, by the way.
And I create like a temple of energy around the smudge. So I go into full channel mode. I create a visual. I tap into like the temple of a place, because most of the smudges are called temple of something. And that's why. Because they have a temple that I visualize and pull those energy threads and create an energy matrices that feeds into the soul of that particular smudge. And then in the future, I can pull down on that same energy for the next smudge and the next smudge of the same type, obviously the same smudge, exactly. So I can energetically, you know, push through if my energy levels are different on a different day, but I don't really want to for a number of reasons now. One is for my own health and well-being, because pushing myself to the limit when that's, you know, I want everybody's things to go out as quickly as possible, but Corona especially has lessons in you can't get what you want all the time straight away in because of Corona.
Definitely.
Because of the virus. So if I'm feeling bad, I just rest. And also, it depends what kind of tired we're talking about. If we're talking about sick, then I'm not going to create projects sick, because I don't want to pass any germs along, obviously, or anything like that. I don't want anyone else getting sick because I was irresponsible. I would never do that. But like tiredness and fatigue, I've gotten to the point where I'm like, right, well, how much do you feel energetically comfortable with? And then stop and rest. And I had to do that just today. Because I wanted to go to the post office for my once a week trip today. And I was so exhausted after a certain point. I was like, we're going to have to go tomorrow in the morning, because they're open on Saturday morning here. So,
yeah, I was going to ask about that, because I know in Norway, they don't deliver mail on Saturday or Sunday, which just astounds me, because here we get mail Monday through Saturday. And now sometimes you will get packages from Amazon on Sunday delivered by the local post office. And I don't know if that's just a volunteer basis, they do it for the extra pay, or if that's a requirement. But you know, you can literally get mail on Sunday here, which astounds me, because I'm like, used to, you never did.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, it's the same here. I do know that some places in Norway, they're reducing the mail even further.
I had heard that.
And it's weird in different places over the world, but here it's fairly consistent for the most part. It's like most places are open Monday to Friday, and then Saturday mornings for the post office. So
now, here's something that's completely unwitchy related, but I'm just mildly curious, because I don't know how all this stuff works exactly, and I probably should. when you ship something to the United States, is it very expensive for you to ship to the United States?
I charge people on the store exactly to America, exactly what I get charged to America. So people in America, they usually get a ship if they order with me, and it goes tracked and signed, because if I do not put signed on it, you will lose your damn parcel.
It's
the USPS postal service at all for that. Because that has happened every single time I've not put tracking on it. So if you get like a £14 or a £20, which would be around now, I guess, the $16, $17 to $25 fee on your parcel, that's because that's what I will pay at the post office.
Right. I know that shipping to you guys seems to be more expensive for us than it is for you to ship to us, which I know it has to do with tariffs and that kind of thing, but I always try to make sure that when I send something overseas, I mark it gift, because then I know you guys don't get the tariffs generally associated with it. So I'm kind of like, we need to make sure we mark gift. And I like write a great big letter, circle it. Mark the box, you know, put arrows pointing to the people at the post office laugh at me. And I'm like, no, seriously, because I've had a couple of friends that I've sent things to that I didn't realize either I forgot to mark it as gift, or, you know, I didn't know how much they were going to have to pay. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, never again will I do that, because I was horrified.
It's
kind of an off base thing, but I just I just shipped a package to Norway for a friend of mine whose birthday is Sunday. It's going to be late. I know it is, but that was one of those things. I mean, it was like $24 to ship it, but it was worth it to me. But anyhow, that was just kind of an interesting thought. Well, you talked about your smudges being your favorite product. Why don't you talk about some of the other products that you produce, so people can check out your website and kind of scope out your products, which are the bomb. I'm just putting that out there.
Thank you. There are candles. There are spell oils. There are spell orbs. They're more decorative that you can hang up. I've been doing a lot of bone work lately. I enjoy a lot of creating bone talismans and things of that nature. I really enjoy that kind of energy now. Obviously, they're usually one of two. They're either wildcrafted naturally from the environment around me, or from a trusted taxidermist who only takes bones from the wild, which have naturally fallen. So I do create those, and I've been doing a lot of that lately, and I do enjoy that spirit work. So I've been doing I did a deer charm just before Samhain, and I loved everything about it, and that tapped into the Ellen of the Ways goddess energy. It was great. And so then there's spell oils and smudges and the aura sprays, which are like the spritzes, and anointing oils, which are a bit more perfumed. I love scent so much. I love working with scent. And it should evoke a response and a magical response in people. And I really love doing that. I probably would have been a perfumier if I didn't do what I was doing, because I just adore scent. Powerful. And then there are things like books. Gosh, I forget all the things that I make. There's a lot. There's a search bar on the store for a reason.
Right. If you're looking for a specific product, you just type in. Yeah, exactly. And I have to tell the listeners that your products are really very high quality, well worth anything you were wanting to charge for them. And I think supporting you and supporting others in the community is really important as a community. I know for a long time, I kind of stepped back from my personal YouTube because there was all of this kind of horrific, I don't even know how to describe it. It was just not a pleasant energy running through the community, particularly on the YouTube vein. So I kind of stepped back from creating, partially because of that and partially because I've just gotten kind of busy. And then when I thought I was getting everything straightened out, all this Corona stuff broke out. And now it's been a lot of shape shifting in terms of adapting my schedule, because some people are wanting teletherapy, some are wanting in person, some want it at their group home or dayhab, and, you know, having to kind of flip it around. And then, of course, I'm putting more of my focus on my herbalist practice, because I'm trying to make a shift into doing more of that and allowing my assistant to see more of the speech patients, because my personal interests have shifted. Speech pathology, it's wonderful. It's a great field. You do a lot of good for people, but it no longer holds my passion. I'm finding that I'm wanting to return more to having that close tie to the earth and utilizing natural remedies. And so I have taken a lot of time to increase my education in that area and to get the necessary credentials to, which, by the way, here are frighteningly low, I might add, to be able to provide that kind of service to people. So, I love getting your products because where I can't create for myself, I turn to you.
So, thank you.
I'm hoping that I will be making another purchase from you soon. I would really like to talk more with you at some point about some of the death work. I'd like to go more in depth in that topic with you, but unfortunately right now we are out of time. So Joey, I want to thank you so very much for coming on here with me again and talking with me and sharing your experiences about the Morgan, because she's someone who I think is garnering a lot of attention and interest at this point in time. And I think having people who are have experience with her is important, rather than just what do you read, because not everything you read is going to be accurate to who she is today.
Or not everything you hear either, but...
precisely. But again, we're talking from our personal experiences. So it's not... I think it's good for people to hear, because I think everybody has a slightly different turn to that. And I think some people feel like if their experiences are not exactly like what they've read or heard from quote unquote experts, that they don't feel that connection is there, which may not be the case. So I think it's important that we talk about her various aspects and respectfully and, you know, discourse on how she might approach or what lessons she may bring, so that people understand that these experiences are one, real, and two, valid.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think you're a wonderful example of that. So I do again appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
I hope to have you on again in the future.
Oh, yes, please.